Center for Inclusive Childcare welcomes you to Inclusion Matters. We share resources and information to support quality childcare for all children. By partnering with early childhood professionals, parents, grandparents, and other caregivers, we work together to help every young child thrive. Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm here today with a recurring guest of ours that we are so grateful to know and learn from. Her name is Dr. Chris Gendreau, who has been a pediatrician for over 30 years supporting children and families with early well checks and all the things that happen in those years of growing up. Thank you for being back, Chris. Welcome.
Thank you, Priscilla. It's wonderful to talk to you.
I'm so glad to have the opportunity today for our conversation about something that when we were discussing this episode, you know, we really talked about what are the things that are coming forward in so many of your times with families and parents when you're checking children and their health, and sleep was a biggie. And so today we're going to talk about sleep and why it's so important. And so why don't we just jump right into that conversation?
That sounds great, because it is not an understatement to say that sleep is on the minds of every parent when they come in for a well child check. It doesn't matter whether it's a newborn or a teenager. It affects their child's life, their family's life, and all of that. And what we know is that sleep is vitally important in so many ways.
Yeah.
And to really look at it, it's important for growth. It's important for how the brain processes things, that attention, being able to pay attention requires that you've had a good quality sleep.
Sure.
Your mental well-being and kids being able to learn some emotional regulation is definitely helped by good sleep. Social interactions, even the health of the body. The studies even show metabolic health is better when you've slept well.
Oh, yes. And that, I think, having the opportunity, which I'm sure you do so often when you're talking with families when they come in for those initial checks, some folks don't know that all of that is related to good sleep. And so I do think that the opportunity that you have as a pediatrician, and now for our listeners to really get that information, is going to be really useful, as you know, a lot of our audience are early childhood educators who spend time with young children and families. And it's great that they can listen to this. And really, one of the questions that I think comes up a lot is, okay, my child is two. How much should they be sleeping? Or how many naps should a child have? And then they get to that point where they're not taking naps. And how much should they be sleeping at night? And it's so confusing. And what are kind of those key pieces that people should be aware of when it comes to amounts of sleep?
Yeah. So when it comes to numbers, you know, when people do research, they want to always have distinct numbers. And between the Academy of Pediatrics and the Sleep Institute, the Institute for Pediatric Sleep, they have come up with numbers at each age. And they actually leave off the newborn period, which is interesting because some babies sleep 20 out of 24 hours, and that can be healthy as they're growing. And some babies sleep 16 hours. And that's okay, as long as they're growing and relatively happy. Uh-huh. But when you look at the older kids, infants, 4 months to a year, should have about 12 to 16 hours of sleep, including naps. Toddlers, and it kind of goes down a little bit from there, as you would imagine. Toddlers, about 11 to 14 hours. Preschoolers, here's a hard one, 10 to 13 hours. Uh-huh. Those kids who are getting kindergarten, they have to go to bed early in order to get the amount of sleep they need to do well in school.
Yes.
And in grade schoolers, 9 to 12 hours, teens, about 8 to 10 hours.
Huh. Interesting. And can you reiterate again where you got those numbers? Because we'll include that also in the description of the podcast when we post it live on our website. But it was the Academy of Pediatrics, and then the sleep.
That's the easiest okay. one to find okay. is the American Academy. The American Academy of Pediatrics will have that. If someone does a Google search, if someone takes a look at their site.
Okay, perfect. Because I know that that is helpful to have that information at the ready for, you know, especially when I'm thinking about my years as a teacher, and just to be able to answer that question and have it handy is nice. So thank you for those references. So yes. when you're talking with families as they come in and parents asking questions related to sleep, what are some of the concerns that they bring forward about their child and their sleep habits?
Yeah, I think to start with the big picture, which is a third of children, when you survey families, a third of children get the amount of sleep that those numbers say they need. So whether it has to do with family patterns, use of stimulants, electronic media, screen time even in the little kids interferes with sleep. So it's because it's not just about the duration of sleep, it's timing, quality, avoiding disturbances around sleep. But sorry, to get back to your question, I would say there were four big topics that parents typically bring up in terms of sleep. And it's falling asleep, whether the kids are resisting falling asleep or unable to sleep. Staying asleep, lots and lots of night waking. It's hard on the child, and it's certainly hard on the parents. Mm-hmm. Their child won't sleep in their own bed. Again, something that I'll talk about later, but they actually have found dramatically improved sleep quality if the child has their own sleep space.
Okay.
And then the harder one, which is my child needs me too much to fall asleep and stay asleep. That one comes up a lot, and it's complicated.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's so interesting. So when we look at patterns and sleep patterns, we're starting to lay those foundations right away with infants and really young kids. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. And the more you look at it, the more you realize that anticipatory guidance with as young a child as possible will set the stage for better sleep later.
That's hugely helpful and also daunting for families.
It's absolutely daunting. And, yeah. And so it's would be important not, I try very hard to not overstate it, because then parents start having yet another thing to feel guilty about.
Right. That
they're not getting enough sleep, or they're not creating the perfect sleep environment. But it's all about setting things up as best you can, given your circumstances.
Right, right. Oh, I so appreciate that. And I think, Chris, you're very gifted at that, is really helping families and you know, them to not feel, have one more thing. I think in our other episodes that you also highlighted some of those things too, that you do the best you can and try with the information that you have to really adapt and learn about your child and their patterns and all of those things. So when you think about that, you know, those terms, good sleep, what are some things that really set kids up for success?
Yes, there's a lot. And what's good about there being a lot of different things that can set kids up for success is that there's not just one thing that's going to help a child with a sleep problem. And actually, before I go into good sleep, I think it's important for listeners to know that this really is an important conversation to have with your child's healthcare provider, because before you start trying to correct a sleep problem, you need to make sure that the child does not have sleep apnea, not an uncommon problem in children. I see it dozens of times a year, that they're not neurodivergent, that the kids who have neurodivergence, they go to sleep differently. And some of the won't be exactly the same for them. Kids who are anxious, you know, there's things that we need to look at that will be helped by good sleep hygiene, but just making sure that this is a conversation you have with whoever is seeing your child for their health care is a really good start.
Oh, that's a wonderful suggestion. I'm so glad you brought that up.
So in terms of what are some of they actually call them in one of the studies they did, they're called the ABCs of sleeping. And actually, if people want to take a look online, Google the ABCs of sleeping, and there's a lot of great information out there. But it starts with age-appropriate bedtimes and wake times with consistency. That looking at what time, just because the parents go to bed at 10 doesn't mean that 10 o'clock is a good time for your child. And interestingly, earlier bedtimes, pretty much across the age spectrum, an earlier bedtime leads to 47 more minutes of total sleep in almost every age group.
Wow.
And so that idea that you catch your toddler before they get exhausted, you don't wait until they're absolutely exhausted, because they actually will get more and better sleep if they go to bed earlier.
Sure. Oh, what a good reminder. And I do think that all of us can think in our brains of a time when our own children, at a, we would call it past the point of no return, where it's we missed our window.
And then I certainly recall that those were the nights they slept the worst. They went to bed exhausted, and then they woke up with a night terror, or they were just restless.
Oh, that's great. Great information. Let's keep going.
Yep. Routines, whether it's brush teeth, read a book, say your prayers, go to sleep. Routines and schedule have also been found to lead to faster falling asleep and less night waking. That routine, we are all creatures of habit, and that if you do things that mean sleep the same way every night, that child will likely sleep better consistently. Now, not every family can do this. That's one of the places where you say sometimes good enough is good enough. But if parents can have a schedule that is the same no matter where they are, that can really benefit the child.
Sure. And so let's just delve into that a little bit more. So we know that just because of events in a family's life, there will be upsets. So, and what you're saying is, so if we look at a week, and maybe one night a week, there's, you know, that you're going to have an event that's going to keep you out later because the child has something after school, or in your sibling, you know, the child's siblings are, they're getting carted around to stuff. If the majority of those days of that week, though, you maintain that good, consistent routine, that's going to be a really good thing for your child.
Absolutely. And all things in moderation. You know, we know that works well in lots of levels. I think that having some of those routines be things that can happen anywhere, the same sleep music, the same sleep blankets, the same little collection. Maybe you even have a bedtime backpack that goes with you if a child is at different parents' homes or at grandma's house a lot, or things that are can be the same everywhere.
Oh, that's a wonderful suggestion. The sleep backpack. Very good. That's a great idea. And I think that truly, and that can be something that the child just, when you talk about your routine that triggers your brain to say, oh, I'm getting ready for sleep, even seeing the backpack and that it's coming with you is kind of a comfort and part of the routine for that child.
It also has been really helpful when I talk with parents who are having trouble with their child saying goodnight, that when the backpack's empty, now it's time for sleep. And you look, and everybody can look in the backpack together, and it's empty. And so that is our signal that it's time for sleep.
Oh, that's beautiful, Chris. I love that. What a great, great concrete visual. All of the good things right there in that example.
That they need.
Yes.
Location, their own bed. Now, this one's a little harder. I take care of a lot of families where culturally this isn't the way their family structure works. Yes. And I think that it's really important to see where people are coming from. And I have had the conversation with families that do tend to sleep together, that maybe their own mat, so that they have a space that's theirs, so that it's a they have their sleep space, just like you have your sleep space.
Okay.
Even be on the same bed. Again, lots of different feelings on this, especially when it comes to infants and their safety. But they have found, I think the bottom line is that having your own sleep space has leads to less waking up at night.
Sure, sure. And I appreciate the fact too that, you know, for you as a pediatrician, and I think that for those of us in the field of early childhood, what we try to do, because in childcare, there's licensing rules where you have to follow the rules because that's how you're licensed and you want to maintain that safety and all of those expectations. But also being curious to know more about what's important to that family in that routine. And there might be some things that can be adapted and remain, but then some of those rules or those licensing guidelines, you know, related to childcare, but at home even too, knowing, well, my child's going to sleep better if they have their own space, but how can I adapt so that we can still be together in the same room? So I appreciate that reminder for all of us to really be in, to be mindful of what's important out of that routine, that And what's the kind of the goal of being together at that time?
Right. Right. Because it's, yeah. And for some people, it's just logistics. It's the one bed that right. they have. And,
right. Right. Yeah.
And for some people, that is just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and next is looking at how does exercise and diet, they put those together, but how do exercise and diet affect it? Well, sometimes being tired helps you sleep, however, probably not right before bed, which is why running kids around the house playing chase or something like that is probably not going to lead to the best falling asleep. Mm-hmm. And diet, certain is that the bedtime snack seems like it's been in our culture forever, but making sure it's not foods, you're probably not going to want chocolate. You're certainly not going to want to have caffeine. That teenager mm-hmm. who's late at night, if we can't get them to not be on their computer as much, we certainly can work on not having caffeine be part of that falling asleep.
Sure. Oh yeah. That's a good reminder.
And fits with, you know, really, the studies really are quite solid on no electronics in bedrooms or right before bed, at least 30 minutes, blue light blockers on so that that light doesn't hit the retina and decrease melatonin. And that content matters, that scary, that's not the time for scary videos that where things pop up out of nowhere. That's just going to lead to challenges with sleep.
Sure. Oh, I find that with myself. If I watch a movie that's upsetting, it's very hard for me to wind down and calm and to get to sleep because I'm so keyed up and also concerned and worried about the characters and all of those things.
Well, and I really worry about kids who just received their first visual example of something scary. Before that, it was only their own imagination that could make something scary. Now they have a visual for what something scary looks like. And it's a reason to decrease it in general, but certainly right before bed, so they don't have to see that visual in their sleep.
Oh, Chris, that was so beautifully said. Oh my goodness, that just like hit me when you said that before that point, it was their own imagination. And when you give those images to children when really they can't process even the difference between some of those things that are pretend and could never happen, and when they're seeing it on a screen, they think it's real.
Very much so. It's why, and again, this is really more about younger children, but I really just get haunted by the thought of older children playing games with a lot of gun violence and the data that shows that they have similar changes in their bodies and minds of someone who has PTSD from the war because they have the same kinds of hyper alertness. And I think you can't do that right before bed. And it certainly has bigger ramifications too, but it certainly can't help but influence their sleep.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh, truly, that's those are interesting and also concerning statistics that they, I mean, research that you're sharing right there. So we'll let, what else do we need to know when we're thinking about those ABCs?
Yes. So, and I like going from there to the next one, positivity.
Yes. Oh,
so,
good.
Is positive. Sleep is not, you have to go to bed. Sleep is warmth and positivity and, oh, you get to go to sleep. And, oh, look at this. It's coming up with lots of good imagery for children and not that sleep is a punishment, which sometimes happens in a lot of families.
Right.
That even talking during the day about how much better you feel when you sleep well.
Oh, yes. Yes. Bringing that forward to a child to say, oh, you know what? Today has been a really fun day. And, you know, I'm wondering if it's because we all went to bed a little bit earlier last night. We all got a good night's sleep. Yeah. Saying that out loud.
Yeah. And other things that help aid good sleep. Working on independence with falling asleep. It's hard. And I think it's the thing I probably spend the most time talking to parents of infants about is how do I get them to sleep without nursing to sleep or taking a bottle to sleep. And it starts with almost day one with helping them figure out other ways, whether it's white noise or snuggling, or there's a whole, the five S's where babies suck and they swish and they swing and then you swaddle. All the things that help babies learn to do that last little bit of sleep on their own will help them sleep deeper, will help them sleep better.
Chris, thank you for those reminders of the things. And as also really highlighting, children do have that ability to practice those things. And when we help them by supporting them with some of those patterns, it really does serve them well for their lifetime, truly.
Yes, yes. And the last one is just that children whose emotional needs have been met during the day tend to sleep better. So time, that's where baby carrying for some of the younger kids, taking that time maybe as part of the bedtime routine to really physically and emotionally connect with a child actually does help them sleep better.
Oh, yes. Oh, so thank you for, so as we, you know, wind things up, I know that you're always great at sharing resources. And so I know that we're going to, either you're going to list a few here, or we can also send links, include links in the description when we load the podcast online. But I do love the way you provided kind of this really well-rounded picture for folks on a lot of different things, and they don't have to do everything all at once perfectly, as you've said multiple times during our conversation. Even if someone said, you know what, tomorrow we're going to start a new pattern and we're going to pick one thing, you know, I think, and I probably won't put you on the spot to say what that one thing is, but maybe you have an opinion about that and you want to share that. But, you know, one thing would make a difference.
Right. One thing would make a difference. And you're right. I look at this list and I don't even know where to start. I mean, I think that if we started with positivity around bedtime, that we're going to, that working on that is really just making sure you're using your words well as a parent. And actually when it comes to something more practical and more concrete, it's that routine. It's fine. It's working on that routine. If it's an older child, coming up with that routine with them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, Dr. Chris Gendro, thank you so much for this really useful and informative conversation about the importance of sleep and some things that we can do to set children up for success long-term, lifetime. I appreciate you and the work that you do with children and families out there in the world. And I know that your patients appreciate you, and our listeners are grateful for all that you've shared. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Priscilla, and I appreciate all the work you are doing as well.
Thank you. So if you look to our website, inclusivechildcare.org, you'll find this podcast and you can listen to this and take notes. And also we'll reference those lovely resources that Chris shared during our conversation. Thank you for listening and we'll look forward to our next episode.
For more information and a wide range of resources, visit inclusivechildcare.org. You'll find information on our coaching services and support on topics such as healthy child development, strategies for encouraging positive behavior, and guidance on including children with unique social, emotional, and learning needs, and much more.